This is Jerry Pippin, and we are back here at Roswell at the Civic Center. And it's a 60th anniversary. Gildas Bourdais is from us, with us from France. But you know a lot about Roswell, don't you?
Yes, yes. This is one of my favorite topics. But I have been invited to not to talk about it, but because it would be like bringing coal to Newcastle, you know.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I have been asked to talk about the French UFO fights. However, yeah. I would be pleased to talk a little bit about Roswell, if you like.
Well, we're going to talk about both.
Okay. Okay.
First of all, you mentioned the French UFO disclosures.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the detail there. We've all heard.
Yes. Well, the news of the year for France has been the release of the official French UFO files, which were at the French National Space Agency called CNES.
Did they open any entire files?
Or? Not yet, no.
Okay.
They are in process of doing that. Now, one thing there is a couple of things I would like to say right away.
Okay.
First, this is really interesting for everybody because it means an official recognition of the reality of UFOs for France. You know, this is not without interest since, as we can see, well, I am just going from the conferences of Richard Dolan and John Greenwald, who explained very, very clearly that there is still a real wall of secrecy in the United States.
Yes,
and, that the official stand on UFOs is that, no, there is nothing. So it is clearly interesting to have another country.
Now, in France, the attitude officially is there is something, but they haven't released exactly what it is?
Yes, it is something like that. That's the official attitude.
Yeah,
yeah, I've got it, yes.
Do you think they're really going to
And that's the
through?
Second point I wanted to stress,
okay.
Because some people were a little over-enthusiastic in spring. They thought that the French government was releasing secret files.
Oh yeah, those pesky
this is
French
not
are
exactly
tell the
this is not exactly what's happening. I see you understand my point. Yes. What they are doing is releasing files which were gathering dust in their offices, you know, and people were demanding these files since many years. And okay, they say now. You will have them, yes, we are putting them on our website. But the main cases, we knew them already. They have some very good cases, and I am ready to talk a little bit about that.
Right. So in many ways, it's kind of what happened down in Brazil. They released some information, but it was something
right.
The researchers
yes,
knew about already.
Yes, yes. What happened in Brazil recently is that the Air Force decided to show some files to researchers.
Uh-huh.
I know well one of them, A.G. Jevard.
Yeah, we know him very
who wrote about that. And what happened is that they were shown the files, but they didn't have the copy of them. You know? That's another kind of situation which is rather peculiar.
That's an understatement. you've been around this field for a while. The UFO release in France.
Yes.
Are they telling the truth?
It is a long story, you know, because the French UFO files. It's quite a long story now. It has been lasting for 30 years actually.
Oh,
because
really?
Yes, the first. Study was launched in 1977 inside this National Space Agency, and it worked well. It very rapidly gathered some very interesting cases, like the landing trace of Trans-en-Provence. I don't know if that rings a bell to to the auditors.
Can you tell the audience a little bit what that's about?
Yes. In 1981, in January 1981, there was a brief landing of a small round craft in a garden in the south of France, in the city of Trans-en-Provence. And it's a strong case because it left a round trace in the garden, which was studied rapidly by this French service, by the gendarmerie. Also, the gendarmes are the military police in France. And they have the responsibility of gathering testimonies and giving them to the military, and which gives them, in turn, to the GEPO, that's
right,
the name.
Right.
So they had this information rapidly, and they measured the trace. They found that it was very very credible, and also there were effects on the plants around, and they made many they picked
when
up many samples.
They took up the samples.
Yes.
They had imprints
at different distances inside and outside of the trace.
Yeah, of the craft.
And so they measured effects. They were studying in laboratories, and several laboratories which found very peculiar effects on the plants, like electromagnetic effects, you see.
Okay, and not necessarily radiation.
No, there were no radiations, but there were electromagnetic effects.
Right.
Which suggests that the craft was propelled by some kind of electromagnetic propulsion system. See?
Yeah.
So the craft made a brief landing and took off rapidly from the garden.
Now when we talk about these French experiences, and there will be more forthcoming from the government, we
yes.
assume. We're taking
what I would like to explain now is that there still is a debate in France with people who are favorable to these studies and other people who don't like them and try to reduce them. There is a strong skeptic
element there,
like everywhere else.
Just like here.
Exactly.
So
let's not try to hide that.
Yeah. Now when we talk about the French experiences, is there something, is there evidence of contact, like here in Roswell, we have reported possible bodies. Is something like that ever happened in France?
Yes, we have some strong cases of what we call close encounters.
Encounters.
There are several famous cases which are well documented. The gendarme came and studied. There were landing traces. And the first one I could mention is happened in during the famous UFO wave of 1954 in France. There were thousands of observations and witnesses. And one of them was a steel worker in the north of France who had a little house near a railway a UFO landed there, left traces on the railway track, which were measured, and it was pretty well covered up, actually. This is a rather secret file, in fact, but it is absolutely certain. And there was a measurement on the I don't know the name in English of the wooden pieces of the railway track where the UFO landed, and they measured a weight of about 20 tons for the UFO.
It's pretty heavy.
It is pretty heavy, yes.
Like
it was not made of balsa wood sticks, you know, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty heavy craft.
Yeah.
And the witness saw little people, and he was very frightened, etc. So this is one of the cases we know well in France. Another one is the case of Valensole, another country place in the south of France, in 1965. The witness was a farmer, and early in the morning he saw a kind of craft in his field of lavender, and he came near and realized it was a very strange, very odd craft, and there were little people around it, two little alien beings, let's call them that way. And they paralyzed him for a certain time, and they got into the craft and took off. And there are landing traces. The lavender plants were dead on that place for a couple of years.
There was some physical evidence.
Yes, there is definitely physical evidence, yes. And also a landing hole in the middle.
So basically the extraterrestrials got out of the craft.
Yes.
Disabled this fellow by freezing him in time,
right,
or whatever.
Yes, yes.
And then did whatever they wanted to do and got back in.
Yes. So these are two of the best known French cases.
There are
other cases.
Yeah,
oh,
we could go on for
we could
hours.
Go on for hours.
I wish we could,
yes,
because
yes,
it's very interesting. Do you have a website or a book or something that you can read about your research?
Yes, I have several books, and I have.
We will get all the information.
There is a book I could mention here called "The UFOs: The Gradual Releasing of Secrecy." Is that the good English name for that? OVNI, la levée progressive du secret in French. And it was published in 2001. And it's a general overview of the subject, and with chapters for France.
And
the other one I would suggest, I gave a copy of it yesterday actually to the UFO Museum, is my book, last book on Roswell.
Yeah, and speaking of that, it's so strange you should bring that up, but that's what we need to talk about next. Our time's almost up.
Yes.
I want the French impression, or your impression at least.
My impression is not an impression. It's a certainty that there was a UFO crash in Roswell.
Oh, okay.
There's no question about that for me.
You have no doubt about it at all?
Yes, yes.
And
yes. Too many witnesses. You know, it's a very, very strong case.
Yeah, I've often said that if this was a criminal case, you could...
You could hang 100 people with
right,
that.
Right.
Yes.
You could get a conviction. How about Roswell? It's famous in France, too. Right?
Well...
People know about it.
Yes, people know about it, but you remember probably that there was the big scandal between squads of the autopsy movie in 1995.
Yes, right.
There was a big show in France. I was invited there, so I can talk about it.
Yeah.
And the journalist Jacques Pradel, who is a good man, he made a good show, but he was completely discredited. He lost his job, actually. At the major French TV network, the TF1 program. So it was a rather dramatic situation. And we are slowly getting over this situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
and
there are still some skeptics who are hit hard against all that.
It might have been a great show, but it did a lot of damage.
It did a lot of damage, terrible. Damage, yes.
You know, we could talk for hours here.
Yes,
How do you... is this your first time you've been to Roswell?
No. I went to Roswell in 1995. I was very glad to... I had the opportunity to meet twice with Walter Haut, who impressed me a lot. Really something... a very good man, I think, and... You know that recently he made his written testament.
Yes, I was going to ask you about the affidavit,
which is in the book of Tom Carr and Donald Schmidt.
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking with them and with Denis Balthazar also, who talked about it. And there is a debate going on, but it seems that yes, he saw the craft and the bodies.
Yeah,
I think
that we can say that. I agree.
I believe that because I met the man. I know he was a very, very strong person, and he has said that twice in this affidavit and also in the video recording by Wendy Cornels and Denise Baltazar.
Right. I wish we had more time, but we're out of time. Gilda's brought us. All right. Thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.
More from the Roswell Civic Center in a moment. Don't go away. I'm Jerry Pippin. The 60th anniversary Roswell Jerry Pippin Show t-shirt is now on sale. A limited amount of sizes, medium, large, and extra large, are still available. But they are going fast. This t-shirt is made of fine fabric, 100% ultra cotton. And the design of the alien skull will astound you and others around you when you wear this t-shirt for casual wear. Hurry, supply is limited. $15 plus shipping at shopjerrypippin.com. Welcome back to Roswell, the Civic Center. I'm Jerry Pippin, 60th anniversary of the event, and we have all kinds of interesting people. And I've talked to Dwayne Tudall before by email, and this is a pleasure to talk to him in person. And Dwayne, first of all, tell me a little bit about what your production company does.
What I do is I'm one of the producers of a show called UFO Files, and you know the title.
Yeah.
For that title. But we do, we've done several episodes about UFO investigation. We did one called UFO Hunters, which we interviewed Nick Redfern, Stan Friedman,
right.
A bunch of people. We've done one about the Aurora, Texas crash back in 1897.
Right. The one of Jim Mars' favorite projects.
Jim Mars was our man for that one. He's the go-to guy for that. We've got to spend time with Jim about that one. Yeah,
right.
He was a good guy.
And so this is out of production at this point, I think.
Correct.
You're probably going to be doing more projects along this line.
I have.
Those will vote very well done.
Well, thank you. We did a few others. I've been producing with John Greenwald, who you've interviewed as well.
Right.
We
saw John at a little party the other night. I think he's left town already.
He left Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
You're right.
We did one about Hangar 18 at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Yes.
And we did one about Ted Phillips.
Yeah, I know Ted very well.
Ted's great.
Did you go? You flew out to see Bob Collins out there at in Ohio.
Yes.
Did you fly into
I've been to Ted's house
Missouri?
I've been to Ted's house a couple times. Ted's a good guy. Ted, to me, is the master of the physical evidence people.
Yeah, I love Ted's story about this thing underground and wherever it was, Russia or someplace. Did he talk to you about
that's
that?
That's his passion. That's his passion right now, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about that, but that's his big thing. But he, having come up with J. Allen Hynek, the stories he can tell, I mean, I wish the man would write a book. I wish he would write a book. And I keep saying, Ted, write a book. You know, he just hasn't yet. But he's got so much to tell. But the way he explained it, see, I went into this not sure if I was a complete believer or not, but people like Ted or John Schussler, people like that.
Yeah, and former head of MUFON.
Right, sorry.
John and I have been on the air together a lot.
So much information that makes you feel like, well, these are like fingerprints. And you would say at a crime scene, a fingerprint would help prove guilt or innocence. Same kind of thing with the imprints on the ground or burn marks. We did one about the story about Delphos, Kansas, that had a burn mark on the ground that was there for, 25 years. It glowed.
I'm not familiar with that case. Tell me a little bit about
okay.
that.
Okay. Back in the early 70s,
mm-hmm.
There was a farm. This guy named Johnson saw this craft, and it left a ring on the ground that glowed. It glowed for about a day. His mom touched it. Her fingers became numb. She wiped it on her leg. Her leg became numb. It stayed like that for 25 years. They covered it up. No plants would grow there for a quarter of a century. Now, things like that, they tested the soil. Things like that show that there's something that happened there that people weren't used to. And I find that stuff fascinating to me.
Well, yeah, naturally it is.
Because anybody can look up at the sky and see lights and think, okay, that's a UFO.
So what would we assume out of that experience? That something landed that had either radiation or something. But you did radiation testing.
Well, they did radiation. It wasn't necessarily radiation, but they actually found leaves that were dried as if by microwave, and they closed up. Everybody on the radio can see my hand closing up, but closed up and actually had dirt in them, so it showed that they shrank right then. But the soil 2 feet away from there was untouched. So it was something that this person had seen, something that had left a mark, and something that was controlled by something other than man. That's interesting.
It's more than interesting. It's incredible in many ways. You talk about that. I always say I'm kind of agnostic about the subject, but you really can't be even that anymore. It's like a criminal lawyer in a case. There's so much circumstantial evidence and people, so many witnesses, you have to come to the conclusion something's happening.
Well, I think there's so many witnesses out there. I think, let's say we discount 99% of them. You still have that 1% that has physical evidence, physical proof, close encounters of the second kind type thing, where you have something that happened. We did a story up in North Dakota about a ball that hit a police car. And the police car left a mark on it. Now, they've kept this car in a museum and kept it safe. We brought Ted Phillips up there to investigate this, take samples, do things like that. There's so many cases where there's actual, not just lights in the sky, but...
So you're talking about a ball, an orb, or whatever.
Yeah.
I
can't explain it. It flew out of a swamp area. It wasn't swamp gas, mm-hmm. But it flew out of a swamp area, hit this police car. And when a police car gets, police get involved, like the Lonnie Zamora case in 1964 in Socorro, New Mexico, when police are involved, you want to give them more clout because they're not going to be prone to being drunk or being a hazy witness. They're very good at spotting exactly what it is, describing what it is, and putting their career in jeopardy by going on the record talking about this.
So you like working with Ted Phillips. He might do some more things with you.
I would love to work with Ted again. I've done 2 shows with Ted. We did UFO Hunters, mm-hmm. where we talked to him about the Lonnie Zamora case in Socorro, New Mexico. And then we did a special that was pretty much the Ted Phillips show. He's one of these guys I can't say enough good things about when it comes to his study, his research, the kind of work he does puts into it.
Okay, you turn out these great products on a very low budget.
Right,
and that is to be commended.
Thank you.
You've been in Roswell now all week.
Right.
And you've
first
been
time.
To Roswell many times.
No, I've actually the first time in Roswell.
Oh, really?
Very first time.
I thought you did one other. I thought you did one other show about Roswell.
We did a show called Texas is Roswell.
Okay.
But it was
okay,
about.
Okay, that's how I got confused.
Yeah, but we didn't give it that name. That was a name given by the History Channel. Mm-hmm. But this is my first time here in Roswell. I've been to Aztec. I've been to a few other sites. But I thought I have to come to Mecca.
Have you been out to here to the famous?
I went to the crash site. I don't know whether or not that's actually the site or not.
No.
I'm trying to figure it out.
Well, there's a lot of. Especially with the hot. Affidavit now.
Right.
A lot of discussion on where we really should be looking.
This is the trick. There's supposedly 2 different spots. Is this the spot? I don't know. John Greenwald and I went out there the other day just to say we went. You can't come here and not go to the place they're saying is the place. So
that's true.
You know, I don't know how authentic it is.
What do you make of all of the 60 years? You would think the true story would have leaked out by now. Maybe it has.
This is the thing. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
The thing is, I did a special about about the Kennedy assassination.
Sure.
And, you know, the truth is never really going to come out completely. And I think it's one of these things that, just like with the Kennedy thing, if God himself came down and said, Oswald is the guy, there would still be somebody saying, look at how high the corruption goes. You know, so it's you're never going to have one truth that's going to convince everybody. And that's why we have a 60th anniversary, and we're going to have a 70th and 100th anniversary of this, because people want to come to this. People want to know.
Okay, our time's almost up. What about, regrettably, but what about your projects now? What are you doing?
I'm working
on... What can I look for?
Right now we're working on... We have 2 that just aired, the Hangar 18 one, which we went to the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base,
mm-hmm.
and the Ted Phillips one. We have no more UFO Files episodes coming up, but I've got a few shows that I'm proposing to the networks right now.
That's what I'm trying to find out.
Okay.
I don't name my next show the same way you
do. Well, I don't want to give the name of the thing away, but it isn't anything you've done before. I looked into that to make sure. But it's more about the science of UFO study. It's about going into deeper about what is involved with the looking into the evidence, whether it's with Dr. Roger Lear
with,
or something like
with
that.
With television, when you want to do intellectual in-depth things, it's really a difficult challenge to make a video, you know, the visuals.
This is the, and I know we're just
and,
about
and
time.
And you're pretty good at that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. The trick is, I can tell you, the staff and stuff, the only staff we had for the last show was John and I.
Yeah.
Really, literally, that's it. And we'd hire people in the field, but it's the two of us doing 2 hours of show. People think when you hear a History Channel special, there's a lot of money and stuff. Really, it's not. We're very tight, and people ask me also if there's a...
Got the shoestring, and sometimes you can't afford the string.
Well, and there's so many shows. Exactly, that's true. There's so many shows out there that unfortunately do, I think, do a disservice to the UFO community that don't look into the next level. They'll do... They'll take the government official explanation and not look beyond that.
Well, yeah, they're not really... You're dedicated, as soon as I say that.
Absolutely.
I know how television produces. I'm a radio guy, but I know how TV works. I've worked in TV off and on in my life. You know, you have a certain stand-up guy. We got this guy. He's an expert on that. Good, let's get him on. Let's shoot it. Let's get it out of here. Good, we do that. Hey, we put it together. It matches. The music's fine. The audio works out okay. I didn't like a lot of the video, but what the heck. Let's sell it.
Right. And that's exactly what happens. And so many times people don't do the extra research. Don't. They have come in with an agenda.
You know, one of the things amazing to me is they can sometimes, and not all producers, you're not that way, but a lot of producers will have somebody that mentions something that's really a great story, and they never bother to follow up because they're so narrow-minded on what they're thinking about doing, which I understand because the network's only going to give you a little money.
Right.
So you got to at least get close.
Right, but you can have, I mean, there's a way to do it. I worked with a producer before who went in on and had an agenda, and it really made the show not as good because he did not want to listen, and he didn't want to ask why. And because of that, you get a show where it's insulting to the crowd that's going to watch this. And if you start insulting your crowd, they're not going to watch next week.
That's right.
So why would you do that? I don't want people to know what my agenda is on my show. I want people to look at it and go, okay, I don't know.
Yeah. Are these things available on DVD at the show?
Yes, you can get them from the History Channel and thehistorychannel.com. The shows I worked on, again, UFO Files. The episodes are UFO Hunters, Texas Roswell, Hangar 18, and... Your Alien Encounters, which is...
It's nice that you do so many shows you can't remember who they are and what they are.
Well, I've worked on a lot of shows.
Yeah, you certainly have. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
We will be back in a moment.
The American Southwest, a land of abandoned stagecoach stops, crumbling ghost towns, obscure, overgrown wagon trails, all ghosts of an exciting and romantic past. But amidst the hogback ridges and desolate expanses of the Four Corners region, stories float about of secrets, whispers of extraterrestrial spacecraft, intruding galactic visitors from other worlds, underground facilities, and above top secret recovery operations. Come now on a journey through this prehistoric land as we visit several locations where some of the most guarded secrets of the modern age have alleged to unfold. Along the way, we will speak with some of the most respected investigators, reporters, authors, and lecturers in the field of UFO research.
Fallen Angels, the DVD that shows the mysteries that haunt the desert Southwest. Order Fallen Angels today. From ShopCherryPippin.com.
Headline edition, July 8th, 1947.
One day, I was looking to the sky. I saw it.
Up above the clouds.
It was. A silver shiny disc.
A little bit familiar cut from Roswell, the Blue Planet Tour's name of the CD, UFO Eatery, is the name of the group. They're doing a space opera. They did it here in Roswell. And their lead singer is with us, Joshua Poet. Hey, it's good to have you back on the air.
Thank you very much, Jerry. It's good to be here.
Last time we met is in the desert.
It was. Yeah. Very, very hot out there.
And your hair has changed.
Yes, I decided to go with the blue alien look.
Blue hair here.
Yes.
Well, now tell me what's happening with the band.
Well, since the last performance that you saw us do, we've restructured how we're doing the show. And
okay.
When I wrote the album of 10 songs, I wrote it as a rock opera. And it really needed to go in that direction of being a more theatrical performance. So instead of working as a four-piece band right now, I'm doing the show as a two-person play,
okay,
myself.
Okay, so now you have a nice little video visual setup.
Yes.
You still use that, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And the sound is fantastic. So you made several UFO shows.
Mm-hmm.
This one, you're getting lots of reception, good reception. I've heard some good response. How do you feel about it?
I feel really, really good about being here and the response that people have given. They've shown a lot of love.
I like your jumpsuit.
Thank you.
They can see the picture there. Is this the uniform you now wear?
This is the uniform I wear on stage, the Ufotry logo, and, you know, somewhat like an astronaut.
Right, you got the official band logo there. That's pretty neat. When we talk about playing music for UFO audiences, when you get past your play, do you do regular music too in a thing, or is it basically just a show?
When I do the music, it's pretty much the set.
So it's pretty well laid out in advance.
Yes, it is.
Highly computerized, and so you have to follow a script that you know by heart by now.
Yes, we run the show. It's 10 songs, and from beginning to end, it's a video loop with the music pre-programmed on there with no vocals, so that as I do the show, I do all the vocals live, and the loop, the program just runs.
Now, why did you get interested in UFOs?
When I was little, I started getting interested. I watched Close Encounters when I was little, and I think that was the first thing that made an impression on me. And ever since then, I've been looking at the sky. And
so you haven't had an encounter yourself?
I've seen a lot of different strange things in the sky from time to time and out in the desert. So, yes, I have.
Yeah, and does your show have a message, or is this just flat entertainment?
It does have a message. It's a story of a being who comes down to Earth to bring wisdom from the cosmos. And through the 10 songs, it tells this story of that gives information about the different types of races and issues on the planet and conspiracy theories, all the way to a resolution of peace and the peaceful message that is coming from the different races that are out there.
Okay, so you have a website. They can check it out.
Yes, it's
and they talk. You post your schedule once you start doing more bookings.
Correct.
You're more in the production stage right now, right?
Correct.
Planning things.
Yes.
I'm going to close with this other selection here.
Okay.
And tell me about that. What's the setup on this as we go out of this interview?
Confirm or Deny is a song that came out of a conversation I had a number of times with someone who was part of the FBI. And every time I asked him a question about UFOs, he would tell me I can either confirm or deny. And I heard it enough times that it just kind of clicked, and it just seemed to fit for a song.
And so what do you think? You think the guy knew more than he could confirm?
Oh, he definitely knew a lot more. Definitely did. He just didn't want to say
it. You never got it out of him, huh?
Didn't get it out of him.
That's too bad, because I wanted to share it with us. But we'll share the music, though. Thanks for being
here. Thank you, Jerry. Okay. Thank you very much.
Curtis Scott was our on-location producer, James Fortley, our editor. Until next time, Jerry Pippin, cheers.